You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, May 30th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District in New York City. Today on the program, President Obama's secret kill list. Isn't that wonderful? I guess it's not much of a secret anymore. Blockbuster story in the New York Times yesterday. Scott Walker, the race is tightening in Wisconsin. Tom Barrett in a statistical dead heat. And more Wisconsinites are finding out about the John Doe investigation. If Scott Walker wasn't bad enough, he may be doing a perp walk sometime soon. Who knows? Things in Syria, still horrible. And for those of you who like sushi, you're going to get a special surprise next time you bite into one of those big pieces of tuna. That more Julian Assange loses his extradition case. Oh, I've got plenty of things in the stack today. No guest. And so I will take your phone calls in the first half of the program, ladies and gentlemen. The number is 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. IMs at Majority FM. Majority FM is the IM. You can call us at Majority Live as well via Skype. Yesterday after the program, I got increasingly angry about the Chris Hayes thing. And there are times where things just stick in my craw. And it's no secret that I'm a fan of his program and I'm a fan of his writing. But I just got increasingly angry. And it's okay. Listen, I understand that right-wing nut jobs, they're trolling around for something to talk about. And, you know, I picked up some radio show. I think it was Monday morning or something. And I thought I had heard a reference to him, but I didn't. I wasn't sure. And, one is not surprised. But that Matt Lauer exchange yesterday, I think it was, or 2 days ago on Good Morning America. I can't remember if it was Monday or Tuesday, with that just horrible Donnie Deutsch. And, then the woman from, was it The View? Was she like a celebrity judge on America's Got Talent or something like that? What was her? It doesn't matter. It's the first time I've ever actually seen Matt so diligently Google something. Like, no, I'm going to give you her whole bio. I don't care. But Donnie Deutsch is a regular on that Joe Scarborough program. And this was clearly an opportunity for some. The thing is, Chris Hayes' show is really beyond reproach. I mean, I there is no other program that I think more intelligently, more sensitively, more smartly deals with the issues of our day than that program. I just don't think one exists on television. And there's always, almost always, an opportunity for a conservative to be sitting at that table, more often than not, to express views that may be divergent from ones that you hear on MSNBC or from the other panelists. But it's a very policy-oriented program. And to discuss the implications of labeling our military personnel heroes right off the bat without any discrepancy whatsoever is actually an interesting topic. I mean, that in of itself could be an entirely interesting topic. And the notion that he brought it up and also offered the counter argument to his own personal feelings on that, and then is attacked by the 49% owned General Electric war profiteers, and then I guess 51% Comcast now, but by these idiots who really could not hold even a slight, the dimmest of glimmer of a candle to Hayes intellectually, it was just pathetic. I mean, I just could not get over it. If you missed the program for some reason, we put up that segment on YouTube. But so if you have the opportunity to send an email to Matt Lauer, and it really made me think that, like, you know, I don't know how someone like me could operate in an arena like that. I mean, while I am misfortunate in the sense that whenever I go to MSNBC, I don't get paid, which would be nice if it was a lot of money. I mean, they offered me a little bit, but it wasn't enough money for me to. You know, the bottom line is your income. If your income flows from a certain area, they have certain leverage. I learned that with my parents. And have been, I didn't quite figure out how to navigate those waters terribly well, as people who have followed my career can attest, in terms of, but so if you have the opportunity to send Chris Hayes a tweet or email, I don't know where his email address is, but if you have the opportunity to show your support, do so. Because he is one of the really, really good guys, in my estimation. And by all means, DVR his show. If you can't get up at that time in the morning, just automatically DVR it. Because those are in the, they get those ratings. I mean, that's a show that we would be blessed to have on a daily basis. All right, let's get to this this piece in the New York Times. I want to open up the calls shortly after this, and if you want to call, you'll just be in the screening queue at 646-257-3920, because this is a story that's getting very little play in the corporate media, and partly because I think the American public doesn't care. I think the American public on whole ranges from not caring to being mildly supportive of the capacity of our president to unilaterally decide, now with discussion, of course, with his CIA and military advisors, whether or not to kill somebody. And not just kill somebody, but, you know, take out those people who are in the geographic proximity, to close proximity of those people. And as Joe Becker and Scott Shane write in the New York Times, Mr. Obama has placed himself at the helm of a top secret nominations process. Isn't that lovely? To designate terrorists for kill or capture, of which the capture part has been largely theoretical. There is a clear sense that instead of dealing with indefinite detention at Guantanamo or any other of our black sites the CIA supposedly doesn't maintain anymore, we're just going to kill these people. And the piece was researched by talking to 36 of his current and former advisors. Now, contemplate this for a moment. We spoke to Thomas Drake and Jesselyn Raddick last week, which, if you haven't heard that interview, you're making a massive mistake. And we heard that the Obama administration is going after whistleblowers with an unprecedented fervor, using the Espionage Act more times than I think it's been used in the past 50 years over the course of these three. So the idea that there would be 36 people, current and past advisors, to be able to talk about this stuff, which is theoretically secret, right? I mean, that's the title of the piece. Secret kill list. But the only thing that's secret about the list at this point is the legal justification provided to the Obama administration by the Office of Legal Counsel. We seem to know just about everything else involved in this list, except for the secret documents that supposedly explain why it's perfectly legal for the president to do this. And yet, I can assure you, not one of those 36 people, A, will be charged with espionage, B, will suffer any retribution. What was I on? B? C, didn't do this without the explicit or implicit permission of the White House. So understand, what we're reading here is a long-form campaign ad by the Obama administration. And for people who are willing to read a 20-page, whatever it is, as I printed out, story in the New York Times about something they don't care about anyways, we know who this is for. This is an ad for essentially the military-industrial complex. There's no mass electoral benefit here. There's simply, this is a way of proving the Obama administration's bona fides to a rather narrow group of people. This story does not get written if the Obama administration doesn't want this story to get written. Make no mistake about that. And there is, sprinkled throughout it, some sort of queasiness with this whole program. Just since April of this year, there have been 14 drone attacks in Yemen and 6 in Pakistan. Simultaneously, these drone attacks have become the number one recruitment tool for terrorists. But let's put aside the efficacy of this program for a moment. The Obama administration essentially has developed this program where they will target, assassinate people. And the means in which they do this is by convening a nominations process. I think they call it Terror Tuesday. I'm not joking. They call it Terror Tuesday, where they get together and about 100 people go over a list. Who's going to be on the list this week? Some people have dropped off because we have supposedly killed them. some people supposedly drop off because we no longer determine they're a threat. Just contemplate that for a moment. You're on a list for targeted assassination for maybe one, maybe 52 weeks. And then at one point someone says, we don't really need to kill you. Doesn't that undercut the justification for being on that list in the first place? I mean, we get to see how high the bar is, right? If you can fall off that list without being killed, maybe you shouldn't have been on that list in the first place. Even if you accept the premise that there should be a list. We have seen time and time again, whether it's from John Brennan or any other administration official, the claim that we have not killed innocent civilians with this with these drone attacks. Over and over again, so we see this. John Brennan says we have not killed innocent civilians. We also know that Brennan claimed that President Obama never knew about the killing of innocent civilians back in 2009 on the first drone strikes that were issued under his administration. Well, we now know that's a lie. We now see reporting both from Newsweek and New York Times that that's a lie. There's another way in which they claim that we're not killing innocent civilians. From the piece, Mr. Obama embraced a disputed method for counting civilian casualties that did little to box him in. I want to be clear. This is a methodology that was established during the Bush administration. However, you'll recall that President Obama was fairly articulate and adamant about not carrying out these extrajudicial policies by the Bush administration. It in effect counts all military age males. And I'm not sure what that means. I mean, we know that in our military, we have people from, I guess it's 18 to 60s, 70s. And we already know that the administration has killed a 16-year-old boy, Anwar al-Awlaki's son, who was not in close proximity to Anwar al-Awlaki when he was killed. So let's just be generous and say 16 to male. So any male in a strike zone. It counts all military age males in a strike zone as combatants. What is defined as a strike zone? Well, whoever gets killed by the drone. And this is the best part. Well, I don't know if best part is the right word. The only way they are not considered a militant or a combatant is if there is explicit intelligence posthumously proving them innocent. Who is it that is going out and seeking this explicit? Who is it that's going out and investigating these charred bodies enough to explicitly say there's explicit evidence of this person's innocence? In fact, in our own legal system, we don't even have such a concept. There's a reason why if you are a defendant in a legal case, you go up and you don't say, I plead innocent. You say, you plead not guilty. There is no such thing as explicit intelligence of innocence. That concept doesn't even exist. Counterterrorism officials insist this approach is one of simple logic. people in an area of known terrorist activity, which I guess, you know, that seems fairly a broad definition. We know that at Logan Airport on 9/11, there were terrorists participating in an activity. They were participating in that in planes. We know that in Times Square, there was an attempt to ignite a firebomb. We know that in Georgia and Virginia and in Kansas and many states in our union, there have been terrorist attacks on abortion clinics. But maybe they're defining it in a slightly different way. People in an area of known terrorist activity or found with a top Al-Qaeda operative are probably up to no good. I'm not the first to notice this. Will Bunch, I think, wrote this, and I've seen it in a couple other places. But isn't that what Zimmerman said before he went after Trayvon Martin? He's up to no good. This is the standard in which we targeted and assassinate people? That those around them are probably up to no good. This counting method may partly explain the official claims of extraordinarily low collateral deaths. I'm sure it does. We have now defined out of existence the notion of collateral deaths. That would add to the low number of those because they no longer exist. They can't exist. Because if you are close enough to someone who is hit with a drone strike, by definition, you are not collateral death. In a speech last year, Mr. Brennan, Mr. Obama's trusted advisor, said that not a single non-combatant had been killed in a year of strikes. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. It's like that kid's joke I told yesterday. Hey, Bobby, do you know what time it is? I don't, but I know it's not 5 o'clock. How do you know that, Bobby? Because I'm supposed to be home at 5 o'clock and I'm not at home. They've simply defined out of existence the notion of collateral deaths and then can go on and say, we have no collateral deaths. In a recent interview, a senior administration official said the number of civilians killed in drone strikes in Pakistan under Obama was in the single digits. Of course it was. And then a very brief paragraph. But in interviews, three former senior intelligence officials expressed disbelief that the number could be so low. The CIA accounting has so troubled some administration officials outside the agency that they have brought their concerns to the White House. One called it guilt by association that has led to, quote, deceptive estimates of civilian casualties. Really, do you think so? It's nice. It's nice for the New York Times to throw us a bone and think that there's actually someone with some measure of integrity that at least gets into the White House. The piece goes on to talk about how President Obama also, despite the claims of his most rabid supporters, did little by way of closing Guantanamo. Both Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton and the Attorney General Mr. Holder had warned that the plan to close Guantanamo prison was in peril. This is as the Senate and the House, or I should say the House, was voting to foreclose this opportunity. They volunteered to fight for it on Capitol Hill, according to officials, but with Mr. Obama's backing, his chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, blocked them, saying health care reform had to go first. So he clearly did not fight for this. And at the very least, Hillary Rodham Clinton, a veteran of the Senate, and Eric Holder, the head of the Department of Justice, thought there was an opportunity to fight and to win. Otherwise, they wouldn't have put themselves on the line to say, I'll go down there and help you. When the administration floated a plan to transfer from Guantanamo to Northern Virginia, to Northern Virginia, two Uyghurs, members of a largely Muslim ethnic minority from China, who were considered no threat to the United States, Virginia Republicans led by Representative Frank Wolf denounced the idea. The administration backed down. So they're not solely responsible for this, but they clearly didn't fight for it. Goes on to talk about this Terror Tuesday and the secret nominations process, which is an invention of the Obama administration. So the definition of defining away the idea of collateral damage and defining whoever we hit with a strike, a drone strike, to be combatants or militants, that was not their idea. That was the Bush administration that the Obama administration continued. The setting up of the nominations process to kill people, that was their idea. Given the contentious discussions, it can take 5 or 6 sessions for a name to be approved. And names go off the list if a suspect no longer appears to pose an imminent threat, the official said. That part still just sticks in my head. I don't know how it is possible that you can go from being an imminent threat to, we don't have to kill you anymore. It seems to me that's a big red flag. There's something problematic with the standards and what it takes to get on that list. If you can drop off that list without being killed, you should not have been on that list in the first place, it seems to me. A parallel, more cloistered, so instead of 100 people, it's probably smaller, selection process at the CIA focuses largely on Pakistan, where that agency conducts strikes. Mr. Obama must approve any name. He signs off on every strike in Yemen and Somalia, and also the more complex and risky strikes in Pakistan. Now, remember, when Eric Holder was questioned on how this is legal, he gave a speech where he sort of said vaguely, like, this is not a violation of the Constitution. We provide due process, but due process need not be judicial. It can be not judicial. Due process could just be guys sitting around a table, 100 people, let's say, maybe less, maybe more, who sort of debate whether or not this person should be killed. And the profile of these people range from being a member of the CIA to being a member of counterterrorism to being a military personnel. And then the president, I guess. So you've got all different opinions in that room as to whether or not it's permissible. It goes on to say the administration's very success at killing terrorism suspects has been shadowed by a suspicion that Mr. Obama has avoided the complications of detention by deciding, in effect, to take no prisoners alive. That's very sweet. Then there's a wonderful story of a guy named Batullah Mehsud, the leader of the Pakistani Taliban. Because I know there's some people who listen to this program, and I know, obviously, there's some people who don't listen to this program and say, well, look, we've got to fight and kill people who are an imminent danger to this country. And that's just the bottom line. I'm not going to shed any tears for that. And I'm willing to sacrifice the notion of rule of law, the notion that the president doesn't have the unilateral right to target and to assassinate somebody. I mean, that was something that I think even 15 years ago, there was very little debate about. Which is not to say that it didn't happen. It probably did. But there wasn't a public assertion of that right. There was some notion that if we do this and we get caught, we could be in trouble. And why does that make a difference? Because as you begin to relax these things, as you begin to codify and legalize what was once illegal, it just creeps and creeps. So when you say it's okay for the president to assassinate someone who poses an imminent threat to this country, and it's okay for the president to determine that and to give them due process, and we're talking about, you know, a citizen in some instances, but I mean, if you can do it for a citizen, you can do it for anybody. It's okay for due process to consist of just guys getting together and talking. Because, you know, once you establish that principle, why do we need judges at all? Why do we need criminal judges? Why do we need a trial? Why do we need a trial if you protest and you're arrested? Why do we need a trial if you are criminally negligent? Why do we need a trial if you've killed somebody, if you're accused of killing somebody, if you're accused of stealing something, if you're accused of vehicular homicide? Why do we need a trial if you get a DUI? Apparently, you can have due process by some other forms. Let's just have you're arrested for DUI. We'll just have a representative of SAD and a victim of a drunk driver and a Mormon who doesn't believe in alcohol sit on, they'll get together and they can have a panel and they can provide you with due process. We're going to discuss whether or not you should go to jail. So there's a story of this guy, Batula Masood, the leader of the Pakistani Taliban. Make no mistake, I would imagine I wouldn't like this guy if I met him. And I would imagine very much he would dislike me as well. Apparently, the Pakistani government wanted him to be killed. He did not meet the Obama administration's criteria for targeted killing. He was not an imminent threat to the United States, but Pakistani officials wanted him dead, and the American drone program rested on their tacit approval. The then CIA director, Leon Panetta, said taking out the Pakistani leader, Mr. Panetta warned, did not meet Mr. Obama's standard of near certainty of no innocents being killed. In fact, a strike would certainly result in such deaths. He was with his wife at his in-laws' home. Well, you know, they must have been up to no good. Many times, General Jones said, this is the former NSA chief, Jim Jones, said in similar circumstances at the 11th hour, we waved off a mission simply because the target had people around them and were able to loiter on a station until they didn't. But not this time. Mr. Obama, through Mr. Brennan, told the CIA to take the shot. And Mr. Masood was killed along with his wife and, by some reports, other family members as well, said a senior intelligence official. Maybe kids, maybe not. There was no explicit evidence that they were innocent. So here we now have this targeted assassination for someone who is not a threat to the United States with full knowledge that they would be killing collateral, well, It's not. Is it collateral damage? These people are up to no good. Is it even collateral damage when you know before you press that button that that civilians are definitely going to die? I think they call this mission creep. And today the Defense Department can target suspects in Yemen whose names they do not know. They call it TADS, for a terrorist attack disruption strike. And then it touches on the case of Al-Laki, the American by American, I mean American citizen, who was also a Muslim cleric, who would get on YouTube, say bad things about President Obama, and encourage people to attack the United States. Not unlike we see with go Google militia. Find some guy wearing a mask in Michigan talking about how he wants to strike the U.S. And then apparently they found evidence that Al-Awlaki was engaged in operational terrorism. So he supposedly was helping terrorists. And they talk about this piece about how President Obama justified killing an American citizen without a trial. They write, the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel prepared a lengthy memo justifying that extraordinary step, asserting that while the Fifth Amendment's guarantee of due process applied, it could be satisfied by internal deliberations in the executive branch. The notion that is one sentence in this massive piece, and that's all the debate it gets. There's no one saying, legal experts have never heard of this. There's no one saying, hey, this is a problem. Why do we need trials at all if this is the case? I mean, couldn't we clear those dockets and all those criminal cases across the country? Couldn't we save a lot of money if we just had a panel of people who just take, we're going to do 5 minutes on this one. Up or down, yay or nay. Mr. Obama gave his approval and Mr. Al-Awlaki was killed in September 2011 along with a fellow propagandist. Those propagandists up to no good, ladies and gentlemen. No good. The guy's name was Samir Khan. He was also an American citizen, was not on the target list, but was traveling with him on that road of no goodville. The no good, up to no good highway, I think they call it. And still, at the end, President Obama gets all sorts of kudos. John Bellinger III, a top national security lawyer under the Bush administration, said that because Mr. Obama's liberal reputation and a softer packaging, he has been protected from outrage. After the global outrage over Guantanamo, it's remarkable that the rest of the world has looked the other way while Obama administration has conducted hundreds of drone strikes in several different countries, including killing at least some civilians, said Mr. Bellinger, who supports the strikes. I mean, he's cheering for this. And then there's a couple of sort of notes of what could be problematic. China and Russia are watching. And the United States has set an international precedent for sending drones over borders to kill enemies. But we're so far beyond the notion of efficacy in this debate. And as outrageous as this is, our option for the presidency is Mitt Romney. And it leaves me in a, you know, it heightens my quandary over who to vote for. And I still probably will vote for Obama. The American public doesn't care about this, sad to say. In fact, I imagine to the extent that the American public engages in this story, it would benefit him. But the idea that there is no outrage about this, even if it is one which is simply howling at the moon, even if it is one which has no leverage whatsoever, and by that I mean does not come with the threat of voting for Mitt Romney, the absence of outrage at this is stunning and depressing. And I don't know what else to say. We're going to the better half. We'll take your phone calls. 646-257-3920. I got a bunch of other stories in the better half. Update on what's going on in Wisconsin. Update on your sushi plans for this week. May one or two fish you may want to back off. An interesting story about healthcare, one that I didn't know. But if you pay in cash, there's a lot of things that are much cheaper if you pretend you don't have insurance. Speaking of industries whose business model is not terribly effective, Julian Assange extradition loses his extradition case, and more. I will see you in the better half, 646-257-3920. You can IM me at Majority FM. Folks, we need your membership. Tough economic times for people. We lose members every day, sadly. If you want to sponsor one, send us an email. We'll help you out with that. If you're not a member already, we need your support. Even if you just listen to the first 40 minutes, even if you just listen to 20 minutes a day. Well, if you listen to 20 minutes a day, you're not listening to this. You can become a member right now at majority.fm. You can support the show in other ways, iTunes review, buy our merch, buy your junk that you buy on Amazon through our link. Do yourself a favor, get some great coffee from justcoffee.coop. 10% discount, coupon code majority. Check out the new Majority Report blend they're featuring. See you in the better half.